spoken word.
A taste of Melbourne's diverse poetry scene.
Poets using their voices to entertain, to move, to take you on a journey.
Connecting you to grassroots poetry and performance. Welcome to 3CR's Spoken Word Show. My name is Indrani Pereira, and I'm broadcasting from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, stolen land. We pay our respects to elders past and present. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode of Spoken Word has a trigger warning around the themes of colonisation, death and grief. Please practice self-care and speak to a counsellor if you need to.
In today's show, I'm going to be interviewing Alison J. Barton. Alison J. Barton is a Wurundjeri poet whose work appears in Australian and international journals and anthologies, such as Meanjin, Cordite, Westerly, Mascara Literary Review, Australian Poetry Journal, Black Box Manifold, and many more. In 2023, she was the inaugural winner of the University of Cambridge First Nations Writer in Residence Fellowship. She has been the recipient of several fellowships with Varuna House and the winner of a number of international writing residencies. Alison's poetry appeared in the Best of Australian Poems 2022 and 2023 and has been recognised in numerous prizes. She's appeared in podcasts for The Guilty Feminist and Poetry Says. Her first full-length collection of poetry, Not Telling, will be out with Punch and Wattman this month. Welcome to the show, Alison.
Thank you, Indrani.
It's great to have you here. I'm really excited to hear that your first collection of poetry, Not Telling, is coming out with Punch and Wattman this month. What an intriguing title. Can you tell me a bit about the collection and the poems in it?
Thank you. So the title came to me because the unifying theme of the collection is language and speech, and in fact silence and not speaking. So that's how Not Telling came to me, and it's also a bit of a play on a line in one of the poems in the collection. Yeah, so that's the unifying theme, but the book is also broken into three sections, and they're quite distinct, the sections. So I have one about colonization and Aboriginal Australian history, one that's really about family relationships and just indeed human relationships, and another section that has poems that are written around psychoanalytic theory. But yes, the unifying theme is language, speech and silence. So you sort of see that coming up in most of the poems, I think.
Was there a way in which you sort of came upon the three different sections for the books? Or was that like an intentional thing at the start, or did that happen organically as you're putting together the collection?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting question, because a lot of these poems were written at a time when I wasn't intentionally putting a collection together. So I more or less retrospectively put the collection together. And I think having a collection in sections is a nice way to do it. It sort of breaks it up a bit and guides the reader thematically in a way. So it just kind of worked out that I was able to group the poems into those three sections after careful consideration and reading through the works that I had. It just made sense to put them into those three sections.
And I know people, you know, don't talk about favourite children, but do you have a favourite section in the book?
Ah, that's a good question. I haven't thought about that, actually. Yeah, maybe I do, but I don't want to say. But no, look, there are poems in each section that I'm quite fond of. And yeah, no, I think the sections are so distinct that it's pretty hard to pick a favourite.
Fair enough. I'm wondering if you'd like to share one of those poems with us.
Sure. Okay, I'll read a poem that appears in the third section in the book, and it's called Buried Light. Next to bones, what ledger of curiosity brought ghosts to this land, funerals to these camps, and lulled us to grief? We wore trauma and looked lived in. We blacked moths at sunrise, our deaths writ large, imagined in the dark, buried in the wild. We were bound by an era, by registers of speech. We made the shape of eagles with our hands and summoned our injuries. We spoke with foreign mouths, as if burying light with forged blades. By rough white skies, we found ancestors together in our talk, injected ourselves with the impression of spirits. Afloat in a cold haze, the silver underside of a shrub bristled the bank, lit the thin of our skin. Resting in the water over family, family, family sand prints, we watched silently. not worrying on future catastrophes. There would be no congregation that year. Tell me of losing home, of light on dark sound, of the privileged many. Where will we go after this? Caught by the hair of a skull, the scalp of a neck, backbone bold, waiting for the sun to settle the torture in us all. He will leave this sight. He is missed along the walls.
That was incredible. And I really feel like I want your book now so I can sit down and just go back through the poem and savor the words. There were so many beautiful images in there and phrases, and it was incredible.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I'm wondering if there was anything you wanted to say about the poem.
Well, yeah, I actually wrote this poem a long time ago. And so I actually don't remember the process of writing it, but it's a poem that I would say that it's about colonization, which I think is probably obvious.
It's such an important topic, I feel, colonization, and it's something I know, you know, I grew up in the 80s and it just wasn't a thing. The history that I learnt was so revisionist, it was ridiculous. Mm. And I think it's something that, you know, it's an important topic, and it's a powerful poem, I feel, as well, you know, addressing that topic too. And I think, yeah, having it front and centre, I think is really important. And it makes me wonder, because we're talking about colonisation, what it was like to go to Cambridge. Like, we're talking about the home of imperialism, right? All of those colonisers and like thieves, basically.
Yes.
What was it like to go there as a First Nations poet and to have a residency?
It was a great experience, but of course I was very aware of that contradiction in being there, and also I've reflected on it a lot since the fellowship. It was it was a contradictory experience, and I was there working on another collection, researching missions and relationships between Indigenous people and German missionaries. So it was a fraught experience doing that in the buildings of Cambridge, but it was a great opportunity to access the library and the resources there to start bringing that collection together.
I'm interested that in order to research German missions in Australia, you went to England, that the records were there.
Yes, yeah, there are a lot of records here in Australia, of course, but mostly they're in South Australia, and I do intend to go to South Australia to look at what's there at some point. But yeah, Cambridge, it has, interestingly, a lot of records were sent over there. So there are actually some physical government documents and so on that I looked through while I was there. And I used the trip to Cambridge to then go on to Germany for a couple of months to do a writing residency there and continue the work.
What was that like then, going to Germany? So, you know, the German diaspora came to Australia and then were missionaries.
Yeah, I don't know if you know much about the history, but the German missionaries were actually a persecuted people as well. So they were being religiously persecuted in Germany, and they were Lutherans, and so they sought refuge. It sounds funny to talk about it, but they did seek refuge in Australia in the mid-1800s, or from about 1835. But the irony being, of course, that they then set up these missions to deprive a people of their own spirituality. So it's a fraught history.
I don't know if I should confess, however, I feel that I should, and that is that I'm actually a descendant of those German Lutheran people. So on my mother's side, her ancestors, they came to Australia as German Lutherans who were persecuted in it was Prussia at the time.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. For me, it's quite an uneasy relationship.
Yeah, interesting.
You know, and they were the people who were erasing Aboriginal,
that's right,
people by buying land and being those like pioneers in inverted commas.
Yes, okay, that's really interesting, and thank you for sharing that. The reason I am writing this book is both to illuminate that phenomenon in Australia that I don't think many people are aware of, but also because I too have German ancestry on my mother's side. So I'm not connected with German culture at all. I don't speak the language. You know, it was many generations ago that my family came here. They came here at the same time as those missionaries, but they had no connection to the mission endeavour.
I'm not sure if my family did either.
Right, yeah. Okay.
They were very devout, though.
Right, very yes, religious. Yeah, yeah. And I think it had a really significant impact on Australian society.
Mm, yeah, it's an interesting part of Australian history, I feel.
Yes, yeah, that's right. And as I said, I think it's one that a lot of people aren't aware of.
It's really fascinating to hear about all of that history. And, you know, I think it's really important and vital that we do look at those particular events in our history and we address them. However, I am still really excited to hear some more of the poems you've got that are coming out in that new collection of yours, Not Telling with Puncher and Wattman this month.
Sure.
Do you have another one that you could share with us today?
I do. Yeah, sure. Okay. This one's called Birth Dress. One, given in vain the material of books, languid, effusive. I despair the last two states, the voiceless past. Two, I make trouble for my family disowns me. A worm that comforts the sick, omits religion, believing death may not be painful. Three, my symptoms are abstractions for relation, other. A symbol at a breakfast table, sugared porridge and honey toast. Four, dried flowers fall at the bureau. We are no longer the same language. Quiet is a metaphor, the birth dress. Five, you exist in the imagined dark, hearing sleepers dream. A soft guard at the door amounts to a siege. Six, I breathe rerooted trees, harbour news, the limitations of paper. Seven, this book will become strained, await.
You're listening to Radio 3CR and you just heard Alison J. Barton with her poem from her forthcoming book, Not Telling, with Puncher and Wattman. You read your poetry so beautifully and I'm wondering if you do any spoken word performances.
Oh, thank you for saying that. I don't, actually. I do a number of readings, but I'm very much about the written word and I do enjoy reading out my poetry, but I wouldn't even say it's a performance as such.
That's really interesting because I feel you do it so well. It's like you've been, you know, reading your poetry for years. So does that mean that when you're writing your poems, you read them aloud?
Yes, that's a strategy that was taught to me pretty early on in my poetry career, to always read out your poems because it gives you a different sense, of course, of what's written on the page. And sometimes that can, as you're writing a poem, sometimes that can turn the poem around, you know, particularly if you're stuck, it can take you in a new direction.
Is there a stage in the writing process at which you read out your poem?
No, there's actually not. I don't really enjoy reading my poems out to myself. I do it because it's necessary. There are, in fact, some poems that I don't read out to myself. It's on the page. I'm happy with how it looks and how it's reading. So no, there's no set point at which I would read the poem.
I'm also curious to know about how long you've been writing poetry and when you started writing poetry.
Well, I actually only started writing poetry 5 years ago. So I've been writing my whole life and I always knew that I wanted to be a writer. When I left high school, my first degree was writing and editing. So I've been writing as long as I have had the ability to write. But I always sort of thought that I couldn't write poetry. So it was something that I didn't explore until it suddenly came to me about 5 years ago. And I just haven't been able to stop ever since.
Do you know what it was that prompted that shift from prose into poetry?
People ask me that and I don't know. There was something at play, but I don't know what it was. And what actually happened is a poem just came to me. And it's very rare for that to happen now, but it just spontaneously came to me and I wrote it down and I realized it was a poem. And I literally have not stopped writing poetry since then.
So it basically snuck up on you and ambushed you.
Exactly. That's a good way of putting it.
And there's something sort of mystical, I think, about the creative process. You know, you have science that can explain so many things, but I feel like the human brain is one of our last frontiers.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that potentially explains why I don't have a linear explanation for how I came to poetry. There certainly was something coming from my unconscious, I think. And that, you know, I think there's a lot of the unconscious mind in poetry, even if the writer doesn't think that there is or perhaps isn't aware, I think it's there.
And the third section of your new collection, Not Telling with Puncher and Wattman, has that section on psychoanalysis, if I can actually say it properly.
Yeah.
And so do you feel that sort of has a part?
Yes. The section actually has two sort of parts to it, though the poems are interwoven. There's poetry about psychoanalytic theory. So I actually make references to people like Freud and Irigaray and so on. And then there are dream poems and dream analysis poems in that section. Psychoanalysis is a big area of interest for me. I've studied it. And at a certain point, I started training to be a psychoanalyst, though I didn't continue with the training. But to your point about the human brain being mysterious, that's what fascinates me about psychoanalysis. I think it accesses a part of the brain that we otherwise don't have access to.
Do you feel like dreams then can tell us something about that?
I'm very Freudian in my belief about dreams. Yes, I do. I think dreams have a lot of content that can tell us much about where we're at in life.
Have you got a poem you can share about dream?
I do. It's called Dreams for the Mill. 1. Walk through a vault atop an incline. See yourself in the black of a cat's eye, all pupil disbelief. Clouds loom like mountains above the horizon. Think of the moon in the hours after midnight, light splashes underfoot. 2. Tigers and lions lurk where my home was. I am not harmed. I live in the foundry. 3. Infants forgotten in corners. Killings. I am stalked around yards, pursued in masks. 4. New passages bend from your same door. Never speak to me directly, but look elsewhere. We meet at the arch.
Have you heard about the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme?
It's for mob who were taken from family and community when they were kids.
The Stolen Generations in the Northern Territory, the ACT or Jervis Bay.
It's acknowledgement and payment for survivors to help with healing.
You can apply right now or just find out more. Call 1-800-566-111.
Or visit territoriesredress.gov.au.
Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
A 3CR supporter.
You're listening to 3CR Spoken Word Show, 855 on the AM dial. My name is Indrani Pereira and I'm interviewing poet Alison J. Barton. Before the break, you heard Alison with her poem Dreams for the Mill. So welcome to the second half of the show, Alison. And I'm wondering, what inspires you to write?
That's such a big question. Basically everything. I am in a daily writing practice, so I'm putting something on paper every day. And yeah, anything and everything, I would say.
So everything's sort of grist for the mill?
I think so, yes. Yep. And while I write every day, it's usually stream of consciousness writing that I then read over later and turn into poetry.
Oh, I'm fascinated by the creative process and the actual act of writing. So when you write, is it in paragraph form or are you using dot points?
No, neither. So I very much am writing in an endless stream. And I have a journal. I use paper and pen, and I use grammar sparingly, but there are no paragraph breaks. It's a very continuous line of thought.
And how long do you do that for each day?
Ideally, I would do it for an hour, at least an hour each day. But of course, I don't always get to do an hour. So, even if I write for a few minutes, then I'm happy that I've written something each day. Sometimes it's much longer.
And this is stream of consciousness writing. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
So do you find that and doing it daily helps you to then form poems?
Yes, well, it gives me a lot of material to go over later and turn into poetry. So, I think if I didn't do that, I would produce much less poetry. There have only been a couple of times in my career where I've sat down with the intention of writing a poem and not using any material, any sort of written material that I've produced prior, and a poem has just come to me spontaneously. Usually it's through a great effort.
So is it like your shortcut or your secret hack to writing poetry, doing that daily practice?
I think that's right, yeah.
I really envy you writing every day.
Thank you. A lot of my friends, my writing friends say that to me, that though they usually say they hate me rather than envy me, because it's, for some people they need to write, they must write, but they have to force themselves. And for me, for some reason, it's actually a pleasure.
That's fabulous. That's a great place to be in as a writer.
I feel very lucky.
Oh, have you got another poem for us?
I do, sure. Any particular subject matter you want to hear about?
No, I just like to hear what you would like to share.
Okay, here's a short one for you. It's called Seasons. The 23.5 degree tilt of the earth breaches the sea with a glare unencumbered. Ebbs dip eerily low, sound cut in half. I let it erode me, go home and sort through records like they are my father's body.
Oh, wow. Just completely lost in that poem. And the way we shifted from being at the beach, I was imagining the ocean, and then to being with you and then your father. It was just such a short space of time, but it travelled so much ground, that poem.
That's interesting that you say that. I'm always fascinated to hear what people's interpretations of poetry are. And that poem is about the death of my father, and he had a real affinity with the beach. He loved being in the water. He was a surfer. Yeah, so it was my intention to put a lot of feeling into that poem. I didn't know if I'd achieved it or not.
Is that the first time you read that poem or shared that poem?
No, I've read that one before.
Yep. So you've got feedback already on that one.
Well, actually, I've never gotten feedback. I've read it in public readings, but no one's ever really given me much feedback about that. So it was good to hear.
And talking about feedback, do you belong to a writer's group, or do you have somebody that you share your work with and get feedback as you're going?
Yeah, I am in a writer's group with three other poets, and it's only something that we've started recently, probably in the last year, I would say. And it's incredibly useful for refining poems, or even just sometimes I'll take a poem to that group and I'll think, this poem needs a lot of work. This is in its very early stages. And then the group will surprise me and say, Alison, this poem's ready. You need to put this out somewhere. So the perspective of others it's invaluable.
There's a lot of doubt when you're a writer, and I think that's partly because we work in solitude, right? And if you are then getting feedback from other people and you think, oh, this is rubbish because you've been very self-effacing, they're like, no, actually, it's really good. You're like, oh, okay.
I think what's great about that group as well is that we're all writers, we're all poets, so we are honest with each other. If something needs work, you know, we want to get better and we want to help each other. So it's, yeah, I have, there's real trust there in that group. So I have a lot of trust in those people, and I value their perspective.
I feel like trust would be very important if you're sharing work, especially poetry, which feels very personal.
Yes, you're right. And the group actually, we had a discussion about this recently, that the group came together spontaneously and trust has developed. And I think it's kind of a rare thing as well. You could bring a group of writers together and have it not work. But yeah, there's something about the dynamic of the four of us that works well.
And do you meet often?
We try to meet monthly. And sometimes that doesn't happen because of other commitments, but we meet regularly.
So I'm curious about your writing and if there are particular topics that you're writing about.
In general, you mean?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I really don't restrict myself, and I don't want to force a poem about something. I have done that at times, but it's kind of rare. I think one of my early poetry mentors said to me that something along the lines of, you have to let the poem be what it wants to be. And I think it's very true. I think when I write a poem, it surprises me sometimes, you know, in subject matter sometimes, or where it goes.
And do you feel that's your subconscious speaking to you?
I actually do. Yeah, I think it's the unconscious mind. Yes.
Well, I feel like it's time to give our listeners another poem, please.
Okay, sure. This one's called Tincture. We are half lovers, a tincture with regrets. Shadows approach and I realise it is time to go. But we stay to see what it looks like from the other side. I extricate myself because I like the process of stitching back together. Tidal journey after tidal journey. I cover the desk in artifacts, push aside again what is essential but revulsive. The writing of sweeping sympathies. I don't need it, but I like to long for it. A concise, clear list of hard facts is the last thing I am taking from you. The rhyme of fear coming from your mouth. I can't wait for fantasies to come true.
You're listening to Radio 3CR and you just heard Alison J. Barton with her poem Tincture. I especially love that line about not needing it but longing for it. I feel that's a beautiful way to capture a feeling that I'm familiar with.
Yeah. Yeah, that might almost be a universal experience, maybe.
I feel like it might be.
Talking
about universal experiences, I'm wondering what challenges you find with writing and poetry and getting published, all those sorts of things.
I have sort of steeled myself against the disappointment of rejection because I think I've just accepted that it's inevitable. So I do submit a lot. I mean, I think rejection is probably the biggest challenge for a writer. But for me, I just have this drive to never give up and to constantly improve. So yeah, sometimes if a piece doesn't get picked up, then I will revise it and submit it elsewhere. But yeah, it can be a tough gig.
And what do you do when you get those rejections usually?
I really just move on straight away. So yeah, I think about where else the poem could go or think about editing the poem. And I also think about for that particular journal or that prize or whatever it might be, what I might submit next time that's different, that might be more to their taste, you know.
Because it's so subjective, isn't it? Any form of art.
It is. And I think, you know, with journals these days, they have guest editors. So you really never know what they're looking for. And I suppose that's another encouraging thing for writers to keep in mind, that your poem didn't necessarily get rejected because it's a bad poem. It might just not have been the right fit for that journal, or, you know, it might be something about that particular editor's taste.
Yes, it's not you, it's them.
Yeah. I like to think so.
Yeah. I feel like it's about finding the home for your work.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it does very much feel like that when something is accepted. It feels like the poem has arrived home.
That's beautiful. I think I would just love to hear one more poem to take us home and end the show.
Sure. This one's called Feather Dress. At the amber sick room, a distant dread still creeps, dishevelled to certain ache, unable to breathe in the days between. I can't sleep for admiring the light, the dandelion, a gleaming thicket where you opened the blinds, bristled my skin. I almost taste weightless, a winter we walked into, truth falling from our eyes. You sew your sister's wedding dress for the funeral on a slate hill. No silk stairs to tread, beneath a gloomy mantle, clutches of hydrangeas. It hasn't rained this winter. It's a sign of the cold, that I am weary, that my head lulls to the exhale of a symptomless choir. I think I know how long it takes to disappear. The brittle of earth shadows our destination. Song arcs from your throat. On a feather breeze we will sail this grief.
You're listening to Radio 3CR, and that was Alison J. Barton with her poem Feather Dress. If you'd like to see Alison J. Barton perform her poetry in person, you'll catch her at the Words in Winter Festival from the 23rd to the 25th of August in Daylesford, and she'll also be at the Emerging Writers Festival in September. Thanks for listening to 3CR Spoken Word Show. I'm Indrani Pereira, and you've been listening to an interview with poet Alison J. Barton. Thanks, Alison, for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Indrani.
It's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Great, me too. Thank you.
And thanks to you, to our listeners, for tuning in. If you enjoyed hearing this episode, you can play it again on my podcast page, where you'll also find our extensive archive of spoken word. Head on over to www.3cr.org.au/spoken-word and get lost in a sea of words. And remember to tune in to Spoken Word every Thursday at 9 a.m. here on 3CR for more spoken word goodness.